Monday, February 1st, begins the busy days again. Mr. James Fosberg, head of Mrs. Kennedy's Fine Arts Committee, came in at 11, and we talked White House art. He brought with him a big brochure of pictures, possible acquisitions for the White House art collection, and one which appealed to me greatly, a Thomas Sully portrait of Fanny Kemble. Great actress of her day, beautiful, charming, a sort of fey expression, and a sister, remarkably, of Mrs. Sarah Siddons, the famous actress in England. It's $25,000. Whether we can get it depends on finding a donor or getting the cooperation of the White House Preservation Society and spreading the cost over a good many years using the money obtained by the White House Historical Association from the sale of the guidebooks. We also discussed where to hang the Asher Durand, cleaned, repaired, and long waiting a place. The Hudson River School is not one I really like. Too big, too dark. Perhaps it's just not the country that's familiar to me and dear to my heart. But according to Mr. Fosberg, he's one of the great in American art of the 19th century and deserves to be hung here. It wasn't easy to find a place. There are two pictures in the staterooms downstairs that he says are not good. One, the outside Thomas Jefferson in the Red Room. One, the huge George Washington by an Ecuadorian artist in the Blue Room. We tried the Durand in the upper hall, where it will go, and in the Red Room, where we finally hung it, though I hate to see even an inferior Thomas Jefferson give way to anything. I asked Mr. Fosberg to wait while I went downstairs to join Lyndon for a ceremony where he would pin his fourth Distinguished Service Medal on retiring Air Force Chief Curtis LeMay. Everybody was gathered in the East Room when we went in, General LeMay's family on the front row, along with the McConnells, his newly sworn-in successor as Air Force Chief of Staff. General LeMay, very erect, minus his usual cigar, ribbon-bedecked and solemn, was standing to the right of the podium. Lyndon made a brief and moving speech about General LeMay's long and distinguished career of 35 years in the Air Force. He practically grew up with the airplane. He said, "All free men are in your debt today, and all your countrymen join with me in proudly and gratefully saluting you." I had slipped in next to Hubert on the front row. While General LeMay spoke, I watched Lyndon, standing quietly at attention with his hands fisted hanging beside him, a typical gesture. I wonder if subconsciously it's because he's determined to get through days where he meets obstacles that are bigger than he is and men that are smarter than he is and knows it. But just the same, he's determined. My mind went back to something he'd said about General LeMay a good many years before when he attained a high post in the Air Forces. He said, "Well, we're going to get an Air Force now, or a war." He is a colorful, controversial character, but a can-do man. Jacqueline Cochran was in the audience to give honor to him. I squeezed her hand as I filed out. Then, back upstairs to join Mr. Fosberg and talk about some agenda for our meeting on the 17th. A philosophy of acquisitions during the time I'm here, which I hope will include some of the American great Mary Cassatt, my most hopeful addition. I'd love to have this Sully. Maybe some of the genre, George Caleb Bingham, Sidney Mount. And I'd like to have a Remington or a Russell. They are certainly pictures of American life, if not of American presidents or great political figures. And then there were a series of trips from ground to first to second floor and back again. I saw a part of the early family movies with Mr. Southwick and Liz, taping oral comments as to the time, the people, the event. I wish I could have gotten in a word or two of my observations, but the movies go by so swiftly. And then once more to the second floor to join Lyndon at lunch with some of the staff, Bill Moyers, Jack Valenti, Marvin Watson, and we're so glad he's just joined us, and Horace Busby. And then to okay the final, no, not final, but for now, resting place of the Asher Durand in the Red Room. It's called The Last of the Mohicans. And then for a prolonged hour and a half more, watching the reels of Lyndon's campaign for the Senate in 1941, of Linda as a small baby, and later a series of birthday parties and Halloweens and Christmases, and playing in the backyard at Dillman, Lucy joining in the summer of 47. I stopped it to keep a date with Robin Duke. There's so much to talk about with her leaving. We didn't begin to cover the ground. Linda came in and rattled on about her plans for next summer, music to my ears. Robin would love to have her in Spain and reminded me that that'd be Cecile McGee in Germany for her to stay with. Though I do not know Evangeline Bruce in London, Lyndon seems to feel quite close to Ambassador Bruce, so I suppose we could ask her. But we just must find a responsible grown woman that's fun for her to travel with. Robin and I went to Blair House, and she took me over 3 of the 4 floors of Blair and Lee, telling the saga of the Blairs and the Lees and our own story of doing the house over. Some of the bedrooms still had cards on them, saying Mrs. Saunders, Mr. Huffman Baines, our guest during the inaugural. I came back to the White House and spent a while with Lucy, who, not surprisingly, is piled up in bed with the virus. Last night was a sign of being physically sick, as well as at low ebb psychologically, I think. She has a little fever, feels wretched, and will be out of school for a few days. But she's in much happier spirits.